Good morning. I want to greet you in Christ's name this morning. You can turn your Bibles to James chapter 3. We'll continue our study there. Let's start with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, just come before you this morning. Thank you for James and what he shared to us, Lord. And I pray, Lord, that we would have open hearts, that we could see what we don't see and understand the things that we don't understand, and that we can see ourselves how you see us. As James attempts to take the blinders off of who we are as people, I pray that we would listen and think about it and consider it. In your name I pray, amen. So I've been really enjoying this study of James, and I think I see the big picture a little clearer than what I have in the past. And we're not to the big picture yet. That'll be in chapter 4 and chapter 5. But James has been laying the groundwork for what he's going to address and what he wants to tell these people. He's been setting up what he's going to say in chapter 4. And today we're going to finish James's thoughts or his groundwork, his foundation, and we're going to conclude some things. And then we'll be ready to dive into chapter 4, which I won't do today. But I want to summarize kind of where we're at the end. Like at the start, it's been a little while since I last preached out of James. And I want to remind you where we're at, but I think I'm going to do that at the end instead of at the start. So let's start at verse 1 of chapter 3. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. If we pull out verse 1, my brethren, be not many masters. Masters means teachers. Be not many teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. We would probably come to the conclusion that we probably shouldn't have a bunch of teachers. We probably shouldn't teach people. Maybe we should just come together and read God's word, close the Bible, and all be quiet. Because a teacher has greater judgment. It's harder for a preacher to get into heaven. Did you know that? You heard people say that? It's harder for a preacher to get into heaven. So being a preacher is dangerous. And so we better not all be teachers because we want at least some people to get into heaven, right? Well, I don't believe that, but that's where you can go with this. But that's not James's point. Okay, so don't get hung up on that. I think it makes sense if we keep reading. Because he says in verse 2, gives some context, but also the rest of James says, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. So we need to be really, really careful that what we teach, that we do. And that's been James's theme, is that, well, and it was a problem in Jesus's day as well, that the scribes and Pharisees would teach and they would lay all these heavy burdens on people and not lift a finger to do it themselves or do it to help. And so James is saying that if you're going to teach, you better do it. And if you don't do it, that's a big problem. And I'll read this in what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. It says, "Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye." It's something that we all can fall into. Like we can see somebody else's fault so clearly, and we want to go and help them and set it straight, and by our words, we're condemned. So James is saying not to not teach, but he's saying that the goal is to teach and do it yourself. And so in verse 2, it says, "For in many things we offend all." And I don't believe that is offending each other. I think that is mean that we offend God. And it's so easy to say things and not do it. The goal is to do it, to be a good teacher and to do it. But let's talk about the tongue, going on from verse 2. And I think I might just read that again up to verse 8. "For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea, is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." So, I think verse 5 here says it very well when it says, "How great a matter a little fire kindles." If you think of sometimes out west they have massive forest fires, and sometimes those are caused by a lightning bolt or something like that, but sometimes it happens because somebody threw a cigarette out the window and it started a little fire. It started to smolder, and then it started to a little flame, and it got bigger and bigger until it's this destructive force that nobody can stop. Like it sweeps down over mountains and they faster than a man can run. "How great a matter a little fire kindles." Proverbs has some things to say about words that are fitly spoken. That words that are fitly spoken are like, I think it says they're like apples of gold and pictures of silver. It's so beautiful. It's perfect. Somebody who can come into a situation and say good words, there's nothing like it. But somebody can also come into a situation and drive close friends apart. And Proverbs acknowledges that as well. Unkind words can drive a family apart. And we can probably all think of a time that we have failed, said things that we regret. And we all understand that, I think. We understand how words can tear people down or build people up. Our words can set direction to a conversation. I have a plan of where I want to go in this message, and I have notes, and I'm heading a certain direction, And my tongue is going to determine whether we get there or not. Just like the rudder on a ship is going to determine whether the ship gets to its destination. Your tongue holds the key to whether or not you get to a good place or not. And the answer can be that we should really try to control our tongue, right? We should work really, really hard and try to say nicer things. We should really try hard not to offend. We should really, really try to control our tongue. And James says that the tongue cannot be tamed. The tongue can no man tame. It's impossible. And I want you to think about that. So you can try. Maybe the answer is that we all just be completely silent and just don't speak. But that's not the answer either. I want you to think about the tongue. Well, let me read verses 9 through 12. Therewith bless we God, or with our tongue we bless God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine figs? So can no fountain yield both salt water and fresh. And then I want to read what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12. He said, what is in the heart will come out of the mouth. He said, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasures of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. So I think that makes it pretty clear that trying to tame the tongue isn't going to work. That's not the solution. James says, I believe it's in verse 6, the end of verse 6, he says, your tongue is set on fire of hell. So he talks about the tongue igniting a flame, but something ignited the tongue. Something motivated the tongue to speak a certain thing, and he says that it's ignited by hell. So I wanted to bring a straw along, and I forgot, but think about your tongue as a straw, and you go to a restaurant and you get a drink, and you put the straw in the drink, and you take a sip out of the straw, and it tastes horrible. And you're like, what is it? This is the worst Coke I've ever had. Like, it is nasty. What's the answer? You go throw the straw in the trash and put a new straw in? Is that going to... What if we glue the top of the straw shut? Probably not. No. The answer is what's in the cup. That's how we fix what comes out of the tongue. And that's what James is saying. We can be either... Our tongue can be a fire. Our tongue can be full of deadly poison. Or our tongue can bring out blessing. Our tongue can bring sweet water to people. And think about that. Our tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, or our tongue can be a fountain of fresh water. Well, I didn't portray that right. Our heart can be a world of iniquity. Our heart can be full of fresh water, and our tongue delivers it to people. Maybe that's better, a better way to say it. And it's not just the tongue that delivers what's in our hearts. It's all of our actions that do that. Let's keep going. Verse 13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So this lays it out pretty clear. Whoever is wise and good, you'll be able to tell by his works. How he lives his life, how he treats poor people, how he speaks, etc. But whoever has an evil heart, you'll see that as well through his works, through his words. And I think it's worth mentioning here. I don't want to get. I want to acknowledge the fact that we all have this struggle within us. It's not as though we are good or we're evil, and we don't somehow go in between. Like, we don't somehow have that struggle within us. Like, we do. We have the Spirit of God that dwells within our hearts, and we also have the flesh. And it's a battle. It's a war. We're supposed to put the flesh to death and obey the Spirit. We should have victory over the flesh. And maybe another way of saying what James is saying here is to say that whatever's winning the battle in your heart is going to show. People will see it. He acknowledges in verse 2 that in many things we all offend. So I don't think James is saying, well, shame on you for offending. He's saying, look, take an honest assessment. We all make mistakes. We all offend. We all struggle. But I think it's a fair question, like James is saying, that if our tongue offends or we show some partiality, what's the conclusion? Well, the conclusion is that it came out of a heart that isn't good, right? Or it came out of the flesh. It came out of a heart that's struggling with evil. And it's interesting, so I talked about this struggle between the flesh and the spirit, and sometimes doing one and sometimes doing the other. Well, James talks about that in chapter 1. He says that's what happens, and he calls it double-minded. So at best, if we sometimes do good, if sometimes our tongue delivers salt water and sometimes fresh, at best, we're double-minded. At best, we sometimes do good and we sometimes do bad. And at worst, we're all evil. So, something to consider. Now, our lives should look like verse 17 and 18, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, or easy to be understood, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So what do we do when we look and we see that, wow, I am a little bit double-minded, or I did make a mistake, or wow, I'm seeing something that I didn't see before about my own self? And we'll talk about that in chapter 4 next time I talk. But James does give us something here. For now, if you see that, wow, I'm wavering, or wow, I lack faith, or I lack wisdom, I'm showing partiality, I've been struggling to control my tongue to no avail. James says that if you have faults, it isn't good, and be honest about it. Take an honest look. Be honest about it. Verse 14 says, but if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. And that's the first step, I believe, in change. If you see it, wow, I have bitter envying and strife in my heart, or I have problems with something, I am partial, I am have a trouble controlling my tongue, and I whatever, be honest, be real. That's the first step. The first step in change is admitting there's a problem, right? And you might take the approach, well, I'm not going to admit my problems. not going to do it. It's everybody else. It's everybody else's fault. And if that's the case, we need to talk. Or maybe you take the approach of, well, I'll admit my problems if everybody else admits theirs. And if that's the case, I'll take it. We can deal with that, right? But James is zeroing in on me and on you. And how are we going to respond to that? So let's summarize a little bit where we're at. So James has been laying a lot of groundwork trying to address a problem. But we're three chapters in, and we don't know what the problem is, right? But James has been teaching us how to think about ourselves and about others. And he's done a good job of describing man in his natural state, in his unregenerate state, in his fleshly state, impatient, foolish, double-minded, wavering, natural sinners. We as fallen people have evil desires that lead to sin and death. And he contrasts that with a Father who is perfect and pure. And in him is no variableness, not even a shadow of turning. Man, on the other hand, struggles with deception. We say things, but we don't do them. We say we love God, but we don't do it. We say we have faith, but we don't live it. And James has given us some illustrations to think about. The one that we talked about last time about being partial. We can be partial and not give it another thought, think it's normal, think everybody does it. We can offend with our tongue, or we can teach with our tongue and not do it and be hypocrites and not even realize it. Like that's who we are as people. We are so blind to our own hearts, our own selves, and that's what James is trying to help us understand. So the question is, equipped with this knowledge about ourselves and this knowledge of God, how does that change how we look at other people and how we look at ourselves? So, chapter 4 starts out with, "From whence come wars and fightings among you?" Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? If we have conflict among people in the church, conflict among people at work, family conflict, if it looks like conflict, confusion, and every evil work, things are said, offenses are taken up, there's confrontation, there's whatever, it is probably, to James's point, it is probably not coming out of a good heart. It is probably coming out of desires in our heart that are not good. And if it looks, if our relationships look like verse 17 and 18, well, then there's no wars and there's no fightings, right? If we can always respond like verse 17 and 18 shows, with peace, gentle, full of mercy and good fruits. It's easy to see, I think, how if we don't live out the faith, if we're not good doers of the word, if we don't take Christ's teachings and actually make them a part of us and change our hearts and change how we relate to people, change how we, well, wouldn't, it's easy to see how we can get into big trouble if we continue on in our relationships with an unregenerate heart, heart that is struggling with envy and strife. But I want to ask you a question. If we could love like Jesus did, and if our lives would look like verse 17 and 18, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. If we could do that really well, where would we be today? Our love for each other is supposed to be a beacon of light to the world around us. It's supposed to be the front line, I guess you could say, in witnessing. Like, people see that. People will know that there's love there. They'll be able to see it. You won't have to tell them. They'll be able to tell. And where would we be if we could do that? I don't know. I've been greatly challenged in this study and thinking about myself and thinking about how I respond to people and what's in my heart. What words do I say that offend people? I have relationship struggles too. And so here's what James is saying, and I really want you guys to get this. Why do our relationship struggles seem to end in a forest fire? Why is that? And is it possible to have disagreements and still have love and respect for each other and still have good attitudes? I'm asking that. I'm not asking you that. I'm asking me that. Why is that? And maybe, so let's get a little bit more practical, I guess. Let's say that somebody comes to you. No, you go to somebody else and you say, hey, I think, you give them some advice. If you would do this and this, I think that you would, I think that it would help your situation. And they turn and they say, no, I'm not going to do it. What is your response? Is there fresh water or is there flame in your heart? Is there compassion or is there frustration? Is there long-suffering or is there, I'm done. I'm going to leave them in their problems and they're going to have to learn the hard way. I'm done dealing with these stupid people. No, kidding. But I'm honest question, what comes out of your heart? Or you could look at it the other way too. Somebody comes to you and offers you some advice and you don't like it. And does fresh water come out or does a fire come out? Some things to think about. We need to understand, I think, where we are at as people, what our struggles are, where it's so easy for us to fail. And I think James has done a really good job of bringing that out, that we are probably not as good as what we think we are. We probably struggle a lot more than what we'd like to let on. That's what I see in myself. And I hope you can see it too, because we can't get any further in James. So next, James is going to talk about whence comes wars and fightings among you. And he's going to get talking about maybe some things that you won't understand the rest of it if we don't understand the first part. So I really want you to get that idea that we as people, it is so easy to fall. It's so easy to be hypocrites. It's so easy to be partial. And we need to really be on guard for that. And if we see it in our own lives, what do we do? Well, we'll talk about that in chapter 4. So, Lord bless you. Don't get too discouraged.